This week there's a report out on marijuana that's getting international media attention. The report states that marijuana is the biggest cash crop in the United States, topping out all the other traditional agricultural products and highlighting the incredible demand for marijuana here in America. Joining us today is the author of that report, John Getman. The report is Marijuana Production in the United States 2006. We have links to read the full report at normalaudiostash.com. John, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Glad to be with you.
John, this report highlighting marijuana as the biggest U.S. cash crop is getting a lot of attention around the world. First, tell us how you came to this conclusion and what data you used to get there.
Well, it's actually based on U.S. government reports that estimate that American marijuana farmers produce 22 million pounds of marijuana annually. That's 10,000 metric tons. And that estimate has been circulating in government reports now for a couple of years. And what's significant about it is that in 1981, they estimated that we only produced 1,000 metric tons, that is 2.2 million pounds. And now after 25 years of an incredible eradication program that's been very ambitious, that has pulled out of the ground over 103 million cultivated plants over 25 years, after all this effort, the market has grown tenfold. So it's not, it's a remarkable accomplishment for American marijuana farmers, and it's quite an indictment about the federal program.
John, this report goes state by state. So who's producing the most and who is producing the least marijuana out there?
The states with the most marijuana production are the top 10 are California, Tennessee, Kentucky, Hawaii, Washington, North Carolina, Florida, Alabama, West Virginia, and Oregon. The least producing states are actually some of the smaller states and some of the more northern states where there's less activity, and I actually don't have a list handy of those states. But basically, marijuana has spread from California and Hawaii in 1979 to just about every state in the country right now.
You also make a distinction between indoor and outdoor marijuana cultivation. Why is that distinction important?
Well, for one thing, it indicates the just how much marijuana cultivation has spread throughout the country, even to the point where there's a sizable quantity grown indoors. Also, the Drug Enforcement Administration, when they report on how many plants they seize every year, they provide information on the indoor cultivation seizures as well. And that's really quite a growing area, actually no pun intended, of the marijuana crop. And the continuing increase in the size of and the extent of indoor marijuana cultivation, it just underscores how impossible it is to get this market under control using law enforcement techniques. I mean, the fact is, they can fly around the country all they want and try to get, you know, better and better and more eagle-eyed personnel to spot marijuana plants outside, but there's not as much they can do to find this marijuana that's being grown inside. In fact, the top 10 indoor producing states are California, Washington, Florida, Oregon, Texas, Alaska, Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky, and Ohio. I tell you, it's really interesting to see Florida on that list, because you'd think that Florida, being, you know, one of our southernmost states, would have a large outdoor crop, and it certainly has a significant outdoor crop, but even with the great weather they have outside, there's this incredible amount of marijuana cultivation indoors.
It used to be we had all kinds of harvest festivals around the country in the fall, but not so much anymore because marijuana is being harvested year-round now.
Absolutely. In fact, even outdoors in Hawaii, they have three crops a year. But the indoor phenomena is also a great reflection of the ongoing demand for marijuana. And in fact, one of the questions I've been asked frequently in many interviews about this report is, you know, what's responsible for this growth in marijuana cultivation in the U.S.? And the answer is simple economics. It may not be as simple for me to say, but simple economics, supply and demand. And we've gone from bringing in most of our marijuana from other countries to growing it as much as we can, growing it here in the U.S.
Something else you talk about in the report, John, when you discuss California, is that the state produces more marijuana there than the pot smokers can consume. That's taken the number of 3.3 million cannabis consumers in California. John, how do we know that number? How do we count how many pot smokers are in America?
Well, the federal government goes around asking people, and surprisingly, people tend to tell the truth in many surveys. There's an annual survey done in the United States called the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, and it's been asking people about drug use and related issues now for a good 20, 25 years. They used to do it every 3 or 4 years, and then they started doing it every year as drug policy got to be a more important policy issue in this country. And, you know, there's little things one can quibble about this survey, and certainly one has to note that there will be people who are reluctant to talk about illegal activity and report it to the government. But nonetheless, it's a confidential survey, and it's really the only numbers we have, and it's the best numbers we have on marijuana and other drug use in the country. And it indicates that there's 25 million people who use marijuana annually. Oh, and by the way, they improved the survey instruments, that is the techniques, the policies, the questionnaire they give people. They improved this in 2002 and discovered another 5 million annual marijuana smokers they didn't know about the year before, mainly because people weren't completing the entire survey, and they started paying people to complete the whole survey. It's a big, big survey. And they got better data. So they get this information from there, and one of the reasons that we suspect that California exports a lot of marijuana is that we take the, you know, California has, I think, 13% of the annual marijuana users in the country, but it's responsible for some 38% of all the marijuana production in the country. So just using that disparity in those two figures, there's 9 states that appear to be growing marijuana and exporting it to other states, and those states are Hawaii, Tennessee, Kentucky, California, West Virginia, Arkansas, Alabama, Washington, and even Alaska, though in Alaska the ratio is a lot more similar than it is in other states. It just barely includes Alaska on that list.
John, this report is stating that pot is the biggest cash crop in the U.S., so how does it compare to the other traditional agricultural crops? We have a lot of politics and policy that goes into our farming industry, so what are the other largest cash crops, and how do they compare to marijuana?
Well, first of all, the reason why marijuana is such a large cash crop is that the price for marijuana is just exorbitant compared to other crops. An acre of corn, for example, will bring a farmer maybe between $200 and $250. That's just my, you know, based on past research into this area. One single marijuana plant is more valuable than an acre of corn. And that's why we have this gargantuan value associated with marijuana. But that said, corn is about a $23.2 billion business, and I'm talking prices paid to farmers in the United States. That comes from an average of the production value of corn for 2003, 04, and 05. Now, on that basis, corn's a $23.2 billion crop, soybeans, $17.6 billion crop, hay is a $12.2 billion crop, vegetables, all of the vegetables combined are an $11 billion crop, and wheat, which I've mentioned in kind of comparing marijuana to corn and wheat combined, wheat is a $7.5 billion crop.
John, as you point out in the report, the purpose of the Federal Controlled Substances Act is to control the production and distribution of a given substance. Have we done anything to control marijuana production in America in the last 25, 30 years?
No, we haven't. It's a totally free market. The one of the papers by academics that was published around the time the Controlled Substances Act was passed, it pointed out that you could ban and control a substance like cyclamates, which was a concern about. It's a sweetener for diet soft drinks, for example, and they said there was concern that cyclamates cause cancer. And they said, look, we can ban cyclamates because it's hard to manufacture. You need a factory. It's easy to go find a factory and monitor it and make sure that either nothing's produced or that you know, we can keep track of all the production. But if you can't control the manufacture of it, this set of rules is just not going to work. And that's what's happened with marijuana. There's just no way to control the production, because it has diffused, it has spread out to so many places. And that's the history of the of marijuana cultivation. And by the way, I just want to point out that I brought up cyclamates and cancer. Remember paraquat. In the late 1970s, the U.S. government was spraying the herbicide paraquat in Mexico to kill marijuana plants in the field in Mexico before it could be harvested and brought to the U.S. But what happened was some of the Mexican growers harvested their plants immediately when they'd been sprayed and brought them to market, and American marijuana consumers were very concerned that they were buying marijuana that was poisoned with this herbicide, and that poison would cause very severe damage to their lungs. And that's one of the things that started the American marijuana, the trend of growing marijuana in America.
Also, too, John, when we talk about comparing pot to other cash crops, you mentioned the exorbitant price, especially for good marijuana. But if we did drop the price through legalization, would local governments and the federal government see a significant tax revenue?
Absolutely. There's there's a point where you tax a commodity too much and then you create another black market. I mean, let's just assume that we get rid of the black market in marijuana by making it a legal substance. There's a point where the government brings the price up so high through taxes that it kind of creates the it creates a new black market. But absent that phenomena, the fact is people who use marijuana have shown that they value it and they will pay $200-$300 an ounce. One would hope that the cost of marijuana in a legal market would drop considerably. But, you know, by the way, this $35.8 billion figure I quote, that's price to farmers. And that's only the price to farmers for domestically grown marijuana. We import anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 metric tons of marijuana from other countries. And then when you consider the cost of what someone pays at the retail end of this, we're talking about a market that is 50, 70, 90, maybe $100 billion. There's a way that that can be collapsed down and still pull $5, $10 billion in tax revenue out of that. Now, I'm just giving that as a very general figure. But the fact that people are willing to pay what they pay nowadays for marijuana, they place that kind of value on it, indicates there's a lot of room for state and federal excise taxes, and there's a lot of opportunities there for states to pay for things like education and transportation that they're struggling to find funds for now. And frankly, the federal government has a much bigger burden on national security issues, and even something simple, you'd think it would be simple, that they're talking right now this very week about increasing the size of the Army and the Marine Corps. And whether one, you know, however one feels about the use of our military overseas, a larger military in many respects creates a greater deterrent and creates an environment where they don't really have to use the force. But to add 10,000 soldiers to the Army is going to cost $1.2 billion a year. That money's got to come from someplace, and so the idea of taxing marijuana creates a brand new funding source for a lot of programs at both the state and the federal level.
And John, to sum up here, how do we take this data and turn it into policy so that we can begin to see a tax benefit from marijuana in the U.S.?
Well, the first thing to realize is that the burden of proof here is not upon us to justify legalization. The burden of proof is on the government and law enforcement to justify continued funding for the same old programs and policies that have obviously failed. By the government's own admission, totally independent of my analysis and anyone else's, by their own admission, the marijuana market in this country has grown tenfold in 25 years. There's no way you call that a successful program. The name of the program is an eradication suppression program. Suppression means abolish by force. The goal of this program is to eliminate marijuana cultivation. In fact, trends have gone in the complete opposite direction. In the 1990s, and this is covered in another report that that Normal published on arrests for them a couple of years ago, marijuana arrests doubled in the 1990s with no appreciable impact on marijuana use. So the fact is the marijuana phenomena is completely uncontrolled and unregulated and is not doing anything to meet its own objectives, which is controlling marijuana use. And I think the most important objective that I think every American agrees on and actually has some support for is to eliminate or, more realistically, reduce access for teenagers to marijuana. And this report, I think, crystallizes the issue that we're not making any progress. We have no control over this market. And I'll tell you what that means when it comes to teenage marijuana use. I don't think a lot of teenagers are out there growing marijuana. I don't think they're growing the kind of marijuana that you know is causing these types of growth in the market. But teenagers are selling marijuana. And one of the stats that that was published in the Normal Arrest Report, there's a nice table in there about this. There are over a million teenagers who sell marijuana to their friends and acquaintances at school. And this is one of the things that distinguishes marijuana use in by teenagers from alcohol and tobacco. If we legalized marijuana and took some of these incredible profits out of it, not only would marijuana consumers save a lot of money, but we would also eliminate the profit incentive that there is for teenagers to sell marijuana to each other. And frankly, if we want to have better progress in our education and prevention programs to discourage teenage drug abuse, if we cut down on the availability of marijuana by simply eliminating these million teenage drug sellers per year, I think we can make a lot of progress. And that's something I think that will appeal to all adults, no matter what they think about adult marijuana use.
John Getman is the author of the new report, Marijuana Production in the United States 2006. John, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You can read the full report with the link we have at normalaudiostash.com.